Greetings. Welcome to In Conversation with Trevor, brought to you by Heart and Soul Broadcasting Services. I go beyond the headlines and beyond the sensational. Today I'm in conversation with Professor Jefferd Chifamba, a professor of human physiology and a lecturer at the University of Zimbabwe. If you enjoy this conversation, remember to subscribe, to like, and to share. Let's get down to some work.
The model of education that has existed over the years was meant to produce workers who can speak English and, of course, do some bit of maths. The only way we are going to do the fifth thing of industrialization is when we start producing the products in Zimbabwe. Come on, Trevor, why are we importing toothpicks? Our education was meant to produce workers. So we still have a worker mind.
Professor Jefferd Chifamba, I am delighted that finally you've stopped being Vasco da Gama and you can sit and have this conversation.
Well, thanks, Trevor. Thanks for having me.
I'm so delighted. You know, Prof, people ask the team, who do you invite to come and talk to you, Trevor? Who sits? What yardstick do you use? And I want to take this opportunity today to say, we speak to people that we are convinced are making an impact as far as nation building is concerned. We look for people who are building things, who are building institutions, people who are making a change through the work that they're doing. We're not looking for people who are influencers for the sake of influencers. What are you doing? Are you making an impact? Are you moving the needle? Are you building an institution? Are you building a company? Do you have a story that can inspire others? That's why I have the prof sitting there. Prof, you spoke at church.
Yes.
And I said, I want that man in front of me. I want us to talk.
I actually saw you. I said, this guy, I hope he's not.
And, you know, right now, I don't know what I'm going to talk about because there's so much. But let's start, prof, by setting the scene in terms of your professional qualifications. You are a professor of human physiology. You are the deputy dean, faculty of medicine and health sciences at the university. You are a lecturer for human physiology to medical, dental, and health science students at the University of Zimbabwe. And then you are the acting manager at the University of Zimbabwe for the Innovation Hub, which is the thing that excites me about what you do.
Yes.
You're also chairman of the UZ Research Innovation and Industrialization Week, again, which excites me. And I am inviting you in front of everybody here that we want to see you at the Ideas Festival, sharing the stuff that you're doing at the Innovation Hub. So, Prof, you've been in these roles for a very long time. When you reflect about your involvement in the academic sector, being a lecturer and so forth, what excites you the most about what you've done?
I think a big change happened in 2019.
Right.
Okay. We have had an education model, which we described as 3.0. Now it's 5.0. So, look, the 3.0, we taught students. So if I walked into a lecture theater, the students would look at me and think, this is the man with the data. This is the guy with the physiology. That has changed. I actually was teaching about 2 hours ago. That has changed in the sense that while you are talking up there, the students can be checking you on Google.
An AI.
AI doesn't know what he's talking about. So they can check you on Google. So I don't think we are lecturers anymore. We really are facilitators, guiding students. So that was, we taught, you'd sweat and all sorts. That's not there anymore. And the other thing we did was we conducted research, which is what I've been doing. That's why I'm called a professor. There was this language that publish or perish.
Yeah.
So you published in high impact journals and everything. And then, of course, you got promoted at university. Whether that research made an impact, solved societal problems, was not the issue. But you published. And then the other thing was community service, going to rural areas and stuff. But what happened in 2019 when the government came up with the Heritage-Based Education 5.0 is that there is now innovation and industrialization.
Wow.
So this, I am telling you as a professor at university, just changes your life if you line up with what is happening.
In what way? In what way?
In a way, you know, after teaching during that time, I'll just be thinking about what research, where am I going to be doing? What am I going to be doing? And you sit in your office, there's very little to do. Or, I mean, if there's no research funding, you just sit there and you are bored stiff. But now it's almost like, because young people are walking into the office and saying, Prof, I have this idea. We can solve this problem by doing this. And then it causes you to start thinking differently. What can we do? Who can I talk to get this young person to?
So you're in solution providing more.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now you are no longer bored, stiff about, I'm now going to teach this. No. Your mind is now being exercised.
Wow. And what about the teaching itself? Has it changed since 2019?
So what people need to understand at university, it's different from a school or where you just what is already in the public domain. One of the things about what makes a university a university is conducting research.
Mm-hmm.
So if your teaching is also not backed by research, by what you are doing as a professor or a lecturer, you're just regurgitating what other people have. Exactly.
Yeah.
And students can have access to that which is already in the public domain.
Right.
So research brings a difference in what teaching. When I stand and I say to the students, yes, that's your textbook, which you must read, but you must listen to me because some of the things I'm going to say, you will not find them in a textbook.
Then you're offering something different.
Exactly.
Mm. Prof, the education on one side, industrialization policy on one side,
mm-hmm.
academics on one side, the talent that is coming out of the university on one side. Is there a conversation between the curriculum and the needs of industry?
Okay.
Or we're education, but just for we have kept 1,000 students, they're out there, but what are they doing? What do they have? Is there a conversation?
So, first of all, what you need to know, Trevor, is that the model of education that has existed over the years was meant to produce workers who can speak English and, of course, do some bit of maths. Now, this is, unfortunately, that's the mindset which still exists outside university spaces where there's education 5.0. Because industry still thinks the university is like what it was when I was at university. It's not the same.
Wow.
It has changed.
That's heartening to know.
Totally different. So the language of saying academics, industrialists, and everything, it's not there anymore.
Which is where I was before I sat down with
you. Yes. We now want to, it's now students are being taught to think differently. From first year, actually, some of them start innovating at first year level. They come up with all these prototypes, which, I mean, for the years I've been at university, you say to yourself, wow, this is, because remember, some of them come to university, they're 15 points, 10 points, 12 points. These are smart young people. But the model that existed in the past, we would have these young people who are very smart and we make them brain dead. How? By putting them on a railway line that you think this way, you answer questions this way, you do things this way. So those creative young
people. You cram stuff. You're not creative. They are not regurgitate.
Exactly. So now that has changed. We now have young people who ask questions. Because we said, I mean, not so long ago, this young person came to me and said, Prof, I would like to do a PhD. And I said to him, which disease? Mm-hmm. And he said, what do you suggest? And I said, look, if you just want to do a PhD for the purpose of your publication, that you get these two publications, you get a PhD, it's not difficult. We can do that, but I will not be happy being your mentor in that. But if you say, Prof, what we are going to do is going to be earth shattering. I mean, I said to him, look at malaria. We can send things to the space. We can do all kinds of innovations. We are terrorized by a mosquito. A mosquito is causing havoc. So I want you, your PhD, I want you to come up with a solution where we attract the mosquito and kill it.
Yeah.
So if you talk that language, I'll be your mentor. So he's doing some work on it.
Fantastic.
So
is the industry, is commerce an industry, is the private sector aware that these are the products that are coming out of the university now? Do you get the sense we are aware of that?
Hopefully you don't ignore our adverts when we advertise that we have a research, innovation and industrialization week where young people are showcasing their work. So because people still have the old mindset, they don't think anything will come out of universities today or these young people can come up with solutions. That's where the problem is. But few of the companies, banks and former parastatals are realizing that actually that's where we can get solutions. Because look, I get worried when we are on this mode of experts at importing what we can do here. It's just, I don't believe.
Well, you've taken me to that place where you say what? We love this, is it Lay's, the potato crisps?
Yes.
And we are spending over $1 million.
Yes, every month.
Every month.
I went to trade fair one time and this guy told Chifamba, we are eating these crisps $1 million worth every month. Now, come on, guys. We can't do those things here. Why do we have to be? So when you see all these buses going, let's say, to South Africa.
And bringing in the potato chips.
And bringing potato chips, toothpicks and whatnot. You know, my vice chancellor said, we are importing knowledge. It's not like we don't have that knowledge. We do. What is just needed, at least, is for industry, commerce, the public to believe that our young people have the capacity to come up with solutions. Because this new education 5.0, you'll be amazed what these young people are doing. I can tell you that.
We're going to take a break.
Yeah.
When we come back, I want us to go to that place where you say you'd be amazed to see what this people.
Exactly.
I want us to go to that place and drill and see what is it that you're seeing coming out of the innovation hub, coming from these young people.
Mm-hmm.
What are they producing? So at home, don't go away. We're going to go to that very exciting place. What are we importing which we could produce ourselves? We are a nation of consumers. We should be producing more. See you on the other side.
We can get our engineering students to design the machinery to produce. We are importing tractors.
Africa leadership faces unprecedented challenges. Every decision is scrutinized. Every action is amplified. Every crisis can define your legacy. Zimbabwe is a nation in crisis. Our continent faces complex realities. But denial is more dangerous than crisis itself. At Trevor and Associates, we believe strategic communication is the foundation of effective leadership. Communication, when done strategically, is leadership. It is action. It is behavior. It is clarity when the world is confused. It is dignity when the world is divided. Your reputation is your most valuable asset and your most vulnerable. In a digital age where one post can undo decades of credibility, we don't just manage reputation, we build resilience. Crisis is no longer a probability, it is a certainty. The question is, how prepared will you be when it arrives? Ethical lobbying is essential to democracy and progress. We help you advocate effectively, not with bluster, but with research, relationships, and respect. If you are not shaping the conversation, you are being shaped by it. In an era demanding accountability, responsible business practices aren't optional. They are essential. We help organizations align profit with purpose, ensuring sustainability and stakeholder trust. Doing good is not just morally right. It is good for the bottom line and long-term success. For over 36 years, Trevor has built relationships across the globe, helping leaders navigate complexity with integrity. We listen before we speak. We understand before we advise. We serve with sincerity, sound judgment, and commitment to ethical leadership. Trevor and Associates, we help you build narratives that uplift, protect what you've built, amplify your values in a world hungry for substance and sincerity. Trevor and Associates, your strategic partner, your narrative architect, your advocate in the corridors of power. Trevor and Associates, building resilient leaders for a changing Africa.
Welcome back to our conversation with Professor Japhet Chifamba, a professor of human physiology and a lecturer at the University of Zimbabwe, a man who's passionate about innovation and stopping us from importing things that we should be producing. So what are you seeing coming from these young people at the Innovation Hub, particularly during the what we call the Innovation and Industrialization Week? You've told us beautiful stories about what young people are producing. Shall we start there? What are you seeing happening there?
So let me backtrack a bit. So what happened in 2019, at least at my university, new degree programs were introduced.
Right.
Because, giving an example, in health, we are importing medicines, we are importing hypodermic needles, we are importing equipment. So new degree programs were set up, like biomedical engineering. The idea was, let's make medical equipment in the country. Vaccinology, after COVID, why should we be importing vaccines? So new degree programs, the master's in vaccinology was introduced, many others. Bioinformatics and things, they were introduced. I'll tell you the reason, some of them behind. So we have a girl, I mean, I'm just mentioning a few of them, from first year of doing her biomedical engineering, she started coming up with prototypes of things we currently are importing.
Wow.
I'll mention, maybe she has three now, but two. She said something like, you know, people with dialysis, she was attached to the hospital in Mutare and seeing all these patients coming to a central place where there's a dialysis machine. So she has come up with a prototype where parents, whoever, can carry that and go kumusha, because it can use solar panels too. That's one. And right now, for measuring what we call plasma glucose, people have to prick themselves. She's come up with a prototype. The same young lady. Now, this is just one.
One person.
2 days ago, I see these young people, they call themselves Enectors. They are taking the Lake Chibero, that weed which is terrorizing all of us, and they are making paper, they are making trays for eggs from that. I mean, if you see, you'll be amazed. So we have 11 faculties at university. In every faculty, I mean, these
I saw you sharing some young person with a drone thing. Talk to me about that.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? Yeah?
The young person, I mean, is making these drones, which can go up this way. I mean, they have the knowledge. They have the competence.
So they have the competence. They have the knowledge. Mm. We have given them the education to produce this.
Yes.
Where are we getting this thing wrong? Why is there no lift up from...
I don't know how many, but I can tell you that... I don't know where I heard this story, but I think it's one of my golf mates was telling me that in South Korea, they produced a foldable phone. And before it hit the market, 2 million orders were already out. So at the moment, we are not believing in our own young people that they care. We are the community industry, everybody is comfortable with importing a product which, I mean, let me give you an example. You say to a bank, they are importing software and licensing, paying millions of dollars. All you need to do is go to a university, innovation hub, and say, we would like you to get us 5 young people, put them in a room, give them food, transport to be coming over the vacation. We want a solution in 3 months for this type of software. So you co-create a solution for a bank, but go and speak to the bankers right now. They want to import something that can be done here. I mean, let me tell you about the toothpaste and the beans. I mean, you know these beans which we eat. Are you telling me we can't even move a baked beans? Why are we importing beans? Young people at university in food and nutrition, agriculture, are coming up with, I mean, using raw materials, when I saw gum and stuff like that, to come up with foods that are good for us.
But our mindset is stopping us from believing in ourselves.
Yes.
How do we overcome that, Prof? Is there a medicine for that?
Look, I don't know what the solution is, but I mean, we are doing our part in trying to expose these young people. Maybe it's the pitching skills. We are helping them how to pitch to business people and others. But what will also change the mindset is business people, the public, go and say, I want to see. I have this challenge in my business. Can your students come up with a solution? Let's begin, because the only way we are going to do the fifth thing of industrialization is when we start producing the products in Zimbabwe. Come on, Trevor, why are we importing toothpicks? I mean, we can't make toothpicks with all the wood in Zimbabwe. We can get our engineering students to design the machinery to produce. We are importing tractors. I mean, I'm looking forward to a day, maybe my vice chancellor or the minister says, would like University of Zimbabwe to make the hydraulic system of this tractor, this other university to make the electrical system, where we end up with a tractor made, manufactured in Zimbabwe.
So you believe we can do
it? Yes, we can. I mean, I have seen, it's not like I'm pontificating. I have seen prototypes which young people have made, and they can do it. They are no longer just book, whatever, what maybe we used to.
So talk to me, Prof, about, is this colonial hangover? Is this our minds have not been freed?
I told you that our education was meant to produce workers. So we still have a worker mind. When I finish, I must look for this job. So parents tell their kids that go and do this degree program because you are more likely to get employment.
But you are teaching these kids to be producers.
Yes.
To be manufacturers.
Exactly.
But Trevor and them don't believe in those kids. That's my question. What? How do we unlock that? Is it rocket science?
We will be forced. You know why?
Yeah.
Look at what happened during COVID, where the world locked its doors because we were importing masks, we were importing sanitizers. So the world locked, because we are their market.
Yeah.
So they first of all considered their markets. And after they had sorted their markets, they came to us. But we are grateful that at least the University of Zimbabwe, we led in showing that we can innovate, we can produce the mass, we can. So that skill, the competencies are there, we can. We just want, because unfortunately now people have forgotten that
universities did it.
We can still do it for whatever it is.
and tell me, are you seeing some traction in terms of venture capital funders coming in to support these people? What needs to be done to take these projects and place them in front of funders? Is that happening?
Interestingly, there's one person who, I mean, and others, the president himself actually supports these young people. What happened, at least at my university, I think it was during graduation. And then, of course, we're showcasing all these young people, and the president asked the vice chancellor that, so what happens to these? And he just said, yeah, they go. He himself said, I want them. Take care of them and put his own personal money. So one, at least we have one person, and some of the leadership at university, they believe that the young people can. But what is lacking is the public. The government at least is supporting, but look, there's limited resources. But now I hear there's venture capital of Zimbabwe. So hopefully we'll get some from there. But what I strongly suggest is, if you are a business person, if you run a business, I suggest that 5% of your revenue, you say, this is the product I am importing. Can I not get it made in Zimbabwe? Because here's what is happening. Everyone else in the world is coming to Zimbabwe to get our raw material, our data, and enjoy our fauna and flora. And we are not enjoying that. So business people just say, I'm going to fund
research
into this to at least give me young people who can come up with this. And you find that.
So supposing there's an industrialist watching this, there's somebody with a bit of capital sitting and watching us at home and in the diaspora, and they want to support this.
Yeah.
Where do they go to?
So we have a Directorate of Research, Innovation and Industrialization. So that's the inlet. So you just write email to them and say, look, I have this thing I want. Because then there are also issues.
You'll give us the email and then we'll put it down.
Issues of intellectual property and all sorts of things. And because we also have a business development where everything has to be written down before we start making money. Because once you start making money and...
Then they have the fights begin. The fight start.
Yes.
The like I said, so we'll park that. You and I could go on and on talking about this. The other thing that I like about what you're doing is community roles.
Mm-hmm.
You are on the board of Love Justice International, the Karanda Hospital, Jabulani Children's Home, Zimbabwe Without Orphans. Why are you doing this?
Trevor, anything that... let me say, smell children, I get very excited.
Why?
Well, I grew up in Blawayo, and in 1979, I went to a scripture year in camp, and that's where I became a Christian. So from that year, and I mean, for more than 40 years now, if there's a children's camp, I go to camp. At my local church, I minister to children. That's what wakes me up. I'm very passionate about that. So most, Love Justice is an anti-human trafficking, organization. Originally, the headquarters were in Nepal. Now they're in South Africa, but we serve most of Africa. I'm one of the board members.
What do you do?
So there is a model that we use. It's called interception. If you remember in Zimbabwe, a few years ago, there were about 200 ladies who were trafficked to the Middle East. So we have monitors that are at strategic transit points, borders, maybe airports, where our monitors can tell that person maybe getting themselves into trafficking without realizing. So just a conversation with them can help them say, look, if you are looking for employment, there's a better way of doing it. Because if you cross a border without necessary documentation, you get into slavery wave. So trafficking happens across borders. It also happens within a country. So,
And Karanda Hospital, I've heard a lot of good things about Karanda Hospital. Talk to me about the work.
Great hospital.
There,
So I'm also a board member there. It was, it's a mission hospital, which originally ran under team missions. Now we are doing it ourselves, funding ourselves. Of course, there's still little that comes from outside. And recently, Friends for Karanda was formed by the diasporans. And look, we want to serve the people. We want to provide health the best way we can. And
And any particular sector in the, within the health sector that is things that you particularly do at Karanda? Or is it a general kind of thing?
General, yeah. But some of the doctors, specialist doctors, provide camps. Mm-hmm. So they talk to the authorities at the hospital and say, this particular week, we're going to have this type of a surgical camp. You can come on this type. So the beauty is that we have the medical community also donating their services. They come, anesthetists and everybody, surgeons come and to the place and they get help. Mm. I mean, the patients get help.
You are passionate about better care of our orphans.
Yeah.
It's not an easy thing.
No.
Why is this piece of work again so important for you, to you?
So there's a time we used to fellowship in Mbare, and one of the guys I used to serve with would tell me of stories of children being kicked out of the home, being on the street. And actually, I didn't know what an orphan is until maybe late 90s. I didn't know what an orphan is, because when I grew up, anyone who lost their parent would just came and stayed at our house. So I then, in 2007, an organization invited me to help them. They said, you can continue with your university work, but help us partner with the church to provide hope, a family, and a future for orphans. Now, that was, I don't want to say trauma, but I didn't know that there are children. Once you lose parents, the kind of trauma they go through. And then there were children who people just leave at the hospital, on the streets, and things like that. So it was traumatizing. And I went on a mission. My mission was, every church should have a children's home. I mean, that's where my heart was, that at least the church would provide good care.
Is that happening?
Not really. There are very few churches that are doing that. But children's homes were not the solution.
Is adoption a solution for us as Africans?
Let me tell you the solution which our Department of Social Welfare uses is to find the biological. If the child is found, is there a biological? Is there a family? Someone in the family, Mbuya, Sekuru, who can take care? Then is foster care, can they be fostered? Can they be adopted? But with all this, you bring whatever spirits into by adoption, I don't know. That's a problem. And I think for the church, we should be fighting to bring all these children.
Why are we not doing that? We say we are Christians. How many orphans do we
have? That, James, read James, true religion.
Exactly. How many orphans do we have?
So the statistics, I mean, I've been checking with Zimstat. Yeah. They will say something like 1.3 million. But it's because we say when a child is now 19 years old, they are no longer an orphan. because you are considered an adult. But the last AIDS conference that happened, there's a lady called Susan Hillis, World Without Orphans. She actually said there's more than 2 million, but the state says there's 1.3. You know, there is very few in children's homes, less than 6,000-7,000. Most of them are somewhere in some family. And
on the street?
There are some on the street.
Yeah.
But some were in some family.
Mm.
But the thing is, how do we care for them? How do we make sure they don't repeat the orphan cycle?
Yeah.
That's where the issues are. And for me, I think that's where the church needs to come in full force and take off all these heads of spirits and stuff like that and just take a child into your home. We actually have a young man in our house and we put him through O-level, A-level. He's a computer scientist right now.
Well done. We're going to take a break there, Prof. And when we come back, we're going to go to deeply into your work as a children's church minister. That's something that you are passionate about. Mm-hmm. And also, I want us to go to your research spaces, the work that you're doing around research, because that's also fascinating. So at home, please don't go away. Join us after the break.
Right now, according to the World Health Organization, 1/3 of the adult population in Zimbabwe has high blood pressure.
Africa leadership faces unprecedented challenges. Every decision is scrutinized. Every action is amplified. Every crisis can define your legacy. Zimbabwe is a nation in crisis. Our continent faces complex realities. But denial is more dangerous than crisis itself. At Trevor & Associates, we believe strategic communication is the foundation of effective leadership. Communication, when done strategically, is leadership. It is action. It is behavior. It is clarity when the world is confused. It is dignity when the world is divided. Your reputation is your most valuable asset and your most vulnerable. In a digital age where one post can undo decades of credibility, we don't just manage reputation, we build resilience. Crisis is no longer a probability, it is a certainty. The question is, how prepared will you be when it arrives? Ethical lobbying is essential to democracy and progress. We help you advocate effectively, not with bluster, but with research, relationships, and respect. If you are not shaping the conversation, you are being shaped by it. In an era demanding accountability, responsible business practices aren't optional. They are essential. We help organizations align profit with purpose, ensuring sustainability and stakeholder trust. Doing good is not just morally right. It is good for the bottom line and long-term success. For over 36 years, Trevor has built relationships across the globe, helping leaders navigate complexity with integrity. We listen before we speak. We understand before we advise. We serve with sincerity, sound judgment, and commitment to ethical leadership. Trevor & Associates. We help you build narratives that uplift, protect what you've built, amplify your values in a world hungry for substance and sincerity. Trevor & Associates, your strategic partner, your narrative architect, your advocate in the corridors of power. Trevor & Associates, building resilient leaders for a changing Africa.
Welcome back to our conversation with Professor Japhet Chifamba, Professor of Human Physiology and a lecturer at the University of Zimbabwe. One of the things that you are that absolutely drives you mad, I know, is the way we drink, we take sugar, the fizzy drinks, which have been made very cheap and are now available, and the diseases that come out of that. You've done quite a lot of research, over 120 publications you have on cardiovascular diseases, metabolic diseases, environmental health, and access to care. Talk to me about this passion of us consuming so much sugar. Pip, starting with you, you say you decided that you were going to go off sugar. Talk to us about that story and what it did. Where did it start from? The doctor says you're overweight or you're...
No, so the doctor, my physician said, because I'd been doing high blood pressure work for many years, research on it. So I thought someone like me will never get high blood pressure. So obviously I had all these headaches and whatnot. So I went, I obviously measured myself and I saw that it was high. So I went to my doctor, prescribed medication, says, look, we need to monitor because it's not good. Because I'd been doing work on it, I knew that diet. Now, if you ask my students right now, they will tell you that's according to Professor Chifamba. 8 out of 10 diseases that we have today, a lot of them are a result of what we were putting through this. So I knew because I'd read some work and part of the work we are doing, we call it the PUR studies, a prospective urban and rural epidemiological study. Diet is one of the things which we've been monitoring. We've been following more than 200,000 people over the last 16 years. And we are debunking certain things, which obviously they create a lot of fights because I tell my students that there are three things that are seriously huge in medicine where there's lots of politics. It's the drugs, it's the food, and it's this health and wellness exercise thing. There's lots of politics. And you can be bought as a health practitioner to say something which you don't believe yourself. So sugar is bad news.
your doctor said you...
My doctor said that medication. So October 2024, I said to my wife, no sugar. I cut down 90% of my sugar intake. No sadza, no, that's where sometimes people then say, no, forget it, I'm not doing this. So I took all those things out.
And your blood pressure?
It's as normal. I'm not taking any medication. I have not told my doctor, but if he wants to, because
you've lost weight.
I connected him.
Yeah.
I just... so healthy. I don't even know when I last had a headache.
But our people, because of the cost of food, Coca-Cola, the fizzy drinks, have been made very cheap. So the lunch is a bottle of fizzy drink and a loaf of bread or half a loaf of bread. That's all sugar. What's going to happen to this nation in terms of obesity and cardiovascular diseases?
Non-communicable diseases are very expensive. Even on a healthcare system, it's just too much. And, you know, right now, according to the World Health Organization, 1/3 of the adult population in Zimbabwe has high blood pressure. Mm. What that means is things like stroke, things like what we call myocardial infarction, heart attacks, renal issues, and all sorts of things. Now, it is cheaper. It is cheaper to prevent. This one, I can tell you, people have to make personal choices. Being in children's ministry also, I get worried when I see children and say to myself, yeah, parents are destroying their kids. You will not suffer from any disease if you don't eat sugar. There is no disease you will suffer from.
So you're saying it's cheaper to prevent.
Yes.
How do we prevent? Could you take us through 5 key steps of prevention?
First of all, one of the things that is important is monitor your own blood pressure. So what does that mean? That means we should have a blood pressure monitor in every company, in every home, where people can check themselves. It's not just blood pressure, but also things like blood glucose. Just monitor that.
one, know what it is so that you can track that. Am I going the right direction or wrong direction? Two, do something about what you are eating. Do something about it. If you think that it's a joke, just go on YouTube, type sugar. Just type sugar as a poison. This guy called Robert Lustig has done some work. There's a South African doctor, Tim Knox, who actually was taken to court and everything. He's written a book, Law of Nutrition or something like that. Do something about what you're eating.
But is that not easier to do, Prof, for you and I than for people who are on the margins?
Iowa. What were we eating in the past?
Mm-hmm.
You know, early days when we, early 90s, rural areas were protective against high blood pressure. Because
traditional foods, sorghum, munga, millet.
We drank some of these fizzy drinks maybe once a year by Christmas.
Mm.
But now...
it's a daily thing, twice a day. It's a whole bottle.
I mean, when the government puts tax, you should ask yourself, why are they putting tax on sugar? Because they know the consequences of it on health. But it, when people say it, the food, the alternative protein is costly. Well, that's where we should all come to the space of saying, how do we innovate? How do we, because some of the things you are eating right now, it's, not because you have to. I look at some of the cereals we have for breakfast. It's a company that produced cereals that says you must have breakfast with cereals. They package, they market it. You don't need breakfast. You will not die. So you just have to do something about your food. And of course,
before we go to the golf, are we doing enough at school, at universities? Because that's where the damage is done, at home. Are we doing enough to change the dietary patterns?
No, we're not.
We're not.
We are not. Because we want to do what the Jones are doing.
Yeah.
So if we take our children for lunch at some of these food shops and things like that.
Ice cream.
Guys, when you were growing up, did you know what asthma is?
No.
Did you ever come across?
No.
So it's happening that early because we are introducing our children to some of the foods that they don't need. But because sugar is a drug, it's addictive. So take a child who's not exposed to that, who's not given that, that child is going to be healthy. That's according to me.
Mm.
I tell you, if we do something about food, do something about exercise, our old people in the rural areas, just not the exercise which then causes unnecessary trauma. Just walking.
The walking, doing work.
These guys were healthy. Yeah. They lived longer. Us here in town who lift things and whatnot. How many of us reach 100 years old?
Let me take you to, you were part of, you were a co-investigator of this global epidemiological study in 27 countries examining urbanization and diseases.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me, what were the core findings that you can enlighten us on?
So there are many. I'll start with what... that people who are on medication for high blood pressure actually don't take the medication.
Hmm.
Few of them don't. I think because maybe of the things that end up being caused by the medication they are taking. That's one. So that then leads to problems. I told you about earlier on, and that's a problem. Salt. So when you go and you are told, take low salt. How low? There is a curve like this. So anything below 3 milligrams per day is problematic. Anything above 5 milligrams per day is problematic. That's what we found. And then all these processed foods are bad news. They are bad news. And then the environmental factors. This one, I also have a personal experience to it. We stayed along 2nd Street in Calder Garden at that corner.
Yeah.
Our daughter coughed all the time. But when we moved to a low density area where there was traffic, limited traffic,
congestion
went away. So pollution is bad news. Here's how I try and explain it. During rainy season, which we are going to right now, the number of frogs is now getting limited. At university, we use frogs for teaching our students and all sorts of things. We used to collect them within the campus. But now we have to go far to get the frogs.
Why?
Because you are using pesticides. So those pesticides, if they are able to kill the insects and whatnot, what are they doing on your body?
Wow.
So when I go and I buy vegetables, I'm making a big assumption that whatever was sprayed on it, it was given enough time before it got to the supermarket. So it's all these things. So we have done work on the environment, its impact on health. It's big.
So you've done work on the research.
Mm-hmm.
How do we prevent, how do we reverse this? Have we engaged with that? I mean, the research is out there, is telling us all these things that you're
saying. I actually received an award from His Excellence last year for this type of work. So what then is required is uptake of some of these findings by coming up with policies that will cause people that, look, let me give you an example. Early 90s, went to Marondera, we're measuring blood pressures of people. And this Gogo says to me, I told Gogo, I said, Gogo, your blood pressure is too high. We need to take you to the hospital. And she looked at me and said, Manango, you traveled all the way from Harare to come and give me blood pressure. Remember, we were still in education 3.0. I didn't know how to help Gogo. If it was today, artist people, those in media, will be able to package the message that BP will cause this. How, in a manner that is palatable, that's now the education 5.0. That can, because then it was just health workers. But now you need to bring in artists who know how to communicate so that the message can be understood, the social scientists and things like that. So we need a different level that health workers should not just think it's their purview to communicate health issues. The social scientists, the people in arts and humanities, if it is explained to them, they can package the message better and communicate with it. Eating this or doing that will help you. If we are going to be spraying, we are going to be doing this, this is how it will impact on our health. Eating sugar. So artists can do a better job. But if you give Professor Chifamba to communicate that message, I'm limited because I'm thinking the technical. But someone else can do a better job. So that's where we need...
Tell me, I mean, I'm sitting...
Collaboration,
I'm sitting here, Prof, and the weight of the things that you're saying is huge.
Mm-hmm.
From where we started this entire conversation. It asks questions about us as a people, our belief system in believing in ourselves, finding solutions for the health problems that we're facing. You know, as you're talking, I'm like, when did I last see frogs in my garden?
Because you are spraying this.
How do we deal with these big problems that you, at a national level, the education system, the diseases and stuff, do you get to a point where you are positive we can do this?
We can do it. Do you know, right now at the Innovation Hub, the young people have innovated around what we call biopesticides. So they have a solution to some of these chemicals we are importing, which remain longer than necessary in the environment. So they come up with biopesticides. We just need, let me call it Buy Zimbabwe. Believe in ourselves that we can solve up. When the president says, let's believe that we can do it. And I think I'm convinced 100% that young people, they just need someone who believes in them. If you have a challenge which you think you can't, just go to a university and say, young people, I need a solution to this problem. Mm. And let's believe that they can do it. And I know they can do it. They can do it.
Let's go to one of your passion as a church minister. Mm. And you say you desire to see every child know God. Why is that important?
Some of the problems we encounter today, let me start by going backwards and saying, when a parent says, go and watch TV, okay? So what you're saying to them, go and consume someone else's product.
Yes.
But when you're small, you made your own toys, your dolls, and everything, you did that. What has happened over the years, Zimbabwe used to say 8 out of 10 people call themselves Christians, and 6 out of 10 go to church on Sunday. If a child, this is what I have seen, grows up having a relationship with Jesus, I am telling you, a lot of things get sorted. Now, the Bible talks about in Luke 2, verse 50, Jesus grew in stature, that's physical, in wisdom, that's mental, in favor with God, that's spiritual, in favor with men, that's social. Some of the social challenges we are seeing today, mental health and things like that, a child who has a relationship with Jesus, we cut a lot of those things. And so for me, at least I'm grateful for the science and technology because it is also helping me in the way I package my message to the children. Of course, you're competing with Disney and whatnot. But AI is also sort of things helping me how I can communicate to children. And I am telling you that if Zimbabwean children can have a relationship with Jesus, we'll cut a lot of things that we are encountering, right?
By the way, I believe in what you're saying. 100%. 100%. Prof, I want people out there to get to know you better.
Yes.
Where were you born? Which schools did you go to?
I was born in Blawayo, Mpilo Hospital, there was a school at that called Storage Commission in Blawayo. I went there with my family. It's not there anymore.
What was it called? Do you remember?
Called Storage Commission School. So from grade 1 to grade 5, then I went to Sizinda, grade 6 and 7. And by the way, I did not read any library
books.
No. Then I went to Cyrene. Initially, it was in town at Whitestone during the war. Then I went to Cyrene up to O level, Form 4, then back to Blawayo Northley High School for 2 years, then came to university.
To study medicine?
No, I studied biological sciences. Then I went to the Faculty of Medicine. That's where I did my postgraduate training. Mm.
What was the biggest influence in what you chose to study?
Originally, I really wanted to do engineering because that's what my parents... I got 2 scholarships to go to Cuba. So at that time, parents were excited about children going abroad. Mm. Our child is abroad. So I came to university at the railways there. I was supposed to go to Polytechnic for the final interviews to go to Cuba for engineering, and another one was for teaching. But I saw the University of Zimbabwe bus.
At the railway station.
And then
you jumped in.
Into the bus, and that changed the whole course.
Wow. 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 Fascinating. You've got kids, eh?
Yes.
All of them have grown up knowing God.
Yes. So with our daughter, who's a medical doctor, she loves Jesus. And then my son, I'm sure he is on media. He talks a lot. He refused to come to university after his A-levels at Gateway. So with my wife, we are saying he's going to come to university. Says, no, I'm not coming there. So where do you want to go? We can even send you to Europe and whatnot. He says, no, give me the money. He had read Robert Kiyosaki's book, Rich
Dad. Poor Dad. And you know, I was sitting with Robert Kiyosaki just a weekend ago.
He had read that book. So
what is he doing now?
He's a businessman. He runs his whatever ICT shop and some, what do you call it? Some food outlet.
Wow. Fascinating. Prof, you know I love books. I've got lots of books here. So for our book-loving audience out there, we've got a book club, by the way. We're going to be meeting for the first time on the 2nd of October. And Joe Mtizwa is going to be our guest speaking on some of the books that he's written, including the Crucible, Personal Crucibles. So if you're able to join us, please join. What books have you read? Before you go there, there's this book, you know, The Four Agreements.
Okay.
Which is an amazing book about how to live a life that's purposeful, that is impactful. What are the four agreements? And these are powerful agreements. This book by Anthony Robbins, Awaken the Giant Within. My passion, Prof, is making the young people realize that the most important person in their life, mm-hmm, after God, is themselves.
Exactly.
That if they don't change, it doesn't matter how they want the circumstances around them to change, nothing's going to happen. And I tell them that, you know, people say, I want to go to the diaspora. I say, who are you going with to the diaspora? Isn't it you're taking yourself there? Unless you change, nothing's going to be happening. So great book. This book introduced me to this art of being able to sit with yourself and get to know who you are.
Mm-hmm.
The art of doing things that make you get to know yourself even more, to invest yourself, your more time in knowing yourself and growing yourself as much as possible. It's a book by Arianna Huffington called Thrive.
Mm-hmm.
Very great book. And I've recommended this one before to a number of people. I mean, I keep on recommending it. Think Again by Adam Grant. We get used to doing things, same things over and over again. And this book encourages us to say, sometimes you can change,
mm-hmm,
the things that you do, the direction that you drive every morning, and you see different things. then this book, I love it because it's creating the good life.
Okay.
Creating the good life. Applying Aristotle's wisdom to find meaning and happiness.
Okay.
I'm big about finding meaning and purpose, meaning and joy. And these books are layered on to my daily reading of the Bible. I read my Bible twice a day, in the morning and in the evening. And these books just, you know, provide, enhance the wisdom that I gather throughout the day, knowing myself, living a purposeful life. This is what these books are all about. What books have you read that you want to recommend to the book-loving audience out there?
I've read lots, but...
I know, Bob. I want three. I want just three.
Crucial Conversations.
Aha.
That's a good book. It has helped me. professionally and personally.
I've got a copy upstairs.
I need people to read that one. If you're going to be whether it's at home, some
difficult conversation,
that's a good book.
Yeah.
The other one is When Helping Hurts. Being involved in charity.
Who wrote that? Do you remember?
I forget the name.
I always forget the author. Yeah. So it's When Helping
Hurts. It's When Helping Hurts.
You find it, hey?
Mm-hmm. You know, when you are involved in charity work or wanting to take care of orphans, you can have good intentions.
And
unfortunately, you can cause more harm than what you intend to. So it's a good book to read. And then the third one is Fair Chance. Mm-hmm. That's where my sugar story. Fair Chance by Robert Lustig.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's written in a way that can help anyone. You don't have to be in health or anything. It's simple and it explains the problems of sugar.
Prof, thank you so much. Thank you. So what a joy it is talking to you.
Yeah.
The things that you're doing, particularly the hard work of raising our kids in a manner that is purposeful, that is intentional, so that they impact this world that
we live. Maybe I didn't say something, but Trevor,
please go ahead.
I really, you know, I mentioned that when you send your children to sit and watch
a television,
we are taking creativity away from them. In one of the countries I visited, I went into this creative shop and I wished that maybe somebody can set up a business where you have all these pieces of some things to help children to make things, to draw art, which you can then animate, come up with our own things. You know, if we do that, then children are not locked in a house. They relate with others. We're not getting car wires and dolls. But when we go and buy, and we are already training them to be consumers.
Yeah.
We are not.
Of foreign products.
Yes, we are not training them to be creative, to come up with things.
Thank you, Prof. Thank you so much. Remain sitting there. Let me turn over to our viewers who are all over the world to say thank you so much for your support. Our viewership is growing. Our subscribers numbers are growing. We would love you to join our growing subscribers. So to please subscribe, like, and share. We've created a whole opportunity for you to watch podcasts, to listen while you're cleaning your car or washing plates. So click, go under this video to click onto a link that will send you to those spaces. We value the conversations that take place after this, that is the reactions to what the Prof has been talking about. So let's keep the conversations going. These are important and impactful conversation, and we value support. Until next time, cheers to you all.